This is an ABC podcast.
There have been three great radio doctors in Australia. The first was the blood specialist from Adelaide, Dr. Earl Hackett, whose talks were funny, humane, and wide-ranging. Dr. Hackett even went on to be chairman of the ABC board in 1975. Then there's Dr. Norman Swan, who's been with us for over 40 years or so on the Health Report and plenty more, and has a Gold Walkley and Academy Medal to his name. And then there's Dr. Jim Leavesley, the good doctor from the West, whose warmth and wisdom graced Occam's Razor for so long and who died in March. Jim loved history and told many a story of figures such as Van Gogh, Napoleon, and Henry VIII, teasing out, using modern science, what was really wrong with them. Here, as a tribute to Jim Leavesley, we go back to a talk from 2004, when he discussed one of his heroes, and one of mine, Dr. John Snow. And yes, there were also three John Snows: the handsome, elegant fast bowler who won many a test match for England, the one from Game of Thrones, the TV series which depicted the true ghastliness of modern politics, and the Dr. John Snow who revolutionised medicine, changing our lives for the better in the process. And typically, Jim Leavesley set out not only through the literature, but out into the wider world, the real world, to see what Snow's heritage is made of. Here he is on the case once more, speaking on Snow's sesquicentenary in 2004.
In 1952, when I was doing obstetrics as a medical student at the Liverpool Maternity Hospital in England, there was a 2-hectare piece of vacant land between it and the Myrtle Street Children's Hospital, about 200 metres away. Looking down from the third floor of the mat, where we medical small fry ate, it could be seen that it was derelict land, chest-high in weeds and littered with rusty old bicycles, pram frames and the like. As it was fairly near the city centre, we all wondered why such an expensive piece of land was left forsaken. Gazing down one day, I noticed earth-moving equipment and, as I watched, human leg bones, vertebrae, skulls and similar skeletal bits were exposed and whisked away with guilty urgency. In fact, what was revealed was a mass grave from the great cholera epidemic of 1832. Though doubtless hallowed ground, the city fathers considered it now, 120 years on, far too valuable to languish as a repository for any fusty detritus the locals cared to throw in. So they cleared it, and on the spot today stands, perhaps not inappropriately, a fine waste disposal incinerator. But to me, young and impressionable, it exposed graphic evidence of one of the great scourges of the 19th century, the cause of which then was unknown, but the control of which was ripe for a policy of public health: cholera. Cholera is a waterborne disease which from earliest times has been mainly a malady of the Indian subcontinent. Its impact was not just intense and dramatic diarrhea and vomiting, but frightening dehydration, rendering the victims to become almost wizened caricatures of themselves. It could kill within hours and produced hopelessness and despair in both victims and observers. In 1817, there was a particularly severe outbreak in India. The natural history and cause of cholera was, as I say, unknown at the time and seemed able to leap quarantine rules, so there was no way of stopping its spread to the Middle East and Europe. Until, in 1831, it made its dramatic debut into England in the northeastern city of Sunderland. It was here where John Snow, the hero of our story, made his low-key and somewhat self-effacing entry. There was an outbreak at Killingworth Colliery, where Snow was working as a medical apprentice. He saw death all round and came up with the then heretical idea that the disease was spread via diarrhoea rather than the bad air arising from the corpses, and which was the contemporary medical view. The doctor regarded the colliery as a huge privy, that unwashed hands, shared food, and above all, contamination of the drinking water was at the bottom of it all, so to speak. He had no proof, and anyway, it was too far down the medical ladder to make an impact. He bided his time. In 1839, Snow moved up market to Golden Square in the Soho district of London, becoming a GP and later developing a special interest in the newfangled specialty of anaesthetics. Indeed, in 1853, he was to give Queen Victoria chloroform during the birth of her eighth child, Prince Leopold. An outbreak of cholera in London in 1849 claimed 11,000 lives. Snow viewed with some consternation the squalor and personal habits of some of his neighbours. He could understand the spread within a family, but how did it get to other households, even those of the well-to-do? Any theories he had, he kept to himself. But 5 years later, he got his chance and held back no longer. From 1582, the London water supply had been pumped from the Thames. In 1619, wooden water pipes were laid to supply street pumps and some of the grander private houses. As can be imagined, the water was heavily polluted. And by the 19th century, this had become a matter of concern. Much of the supply came downstream from a sewage outlet, which received effluvia from not only households, but abattoirs, hospitals, tanneries and the like. There were eight separate water companies, and only one had any filtration system. The already highly polluted water coursed from the river via crack pipes, which, in turn, enabled insult to be added to injury by running close to overflowing cesspools. Mind you, Snow didn't know that at the time. In August 1854, cholera was raging in the Golden Square area, his home turf. Remembering Killingworth 20 years before and his feelings about contaminated water, the feisty general practitioner demanded a meeting with the local Board of Guardians of St. James's Parish. That was on the 7th of September 1854, and it is to celebrate this seminal moment in the history of epidemiology and public health that I am telling you about it today in particular. John Snow's proposal was to take the handle off the Broad Street pump near Golden Square and thus stop its use. Already many had died in the city and, more to the point, 83 deaths occurred in people who were using that pump. Of these, 73 lived close by and another 8 lived further away, but always came to use that pump as, rather ironically, they regarded its water to be sweeter. The background of the other two was unknown, but it was obvious to Snow this was the source of the epidemic. At the meeting, the usual spectre of money and inconvenience was raised, so, as you can imagine, there was acrimony, recriminations and raised voices. This was the era of sending boys up chimneys to sweep them and children down mines to haul coal. So polluted water, which in its ordinary state looks fine, was not high on anyone's agenda. The councillors pointed out everyone knew cholera was due to miasma, the rising of bad smells from the fetid surrounds. There were plenty of local examples. The board asked for an inexpensive practical solution. A pumped-up Snow, flying in the face of conventional medical wisdom, replied, "Take the damned handle off the Broad Street pump." So they did, and the epidemic stopped. As the germs responsible for cholera were not discovered for another 30 years by Robert Koch, it was an inspired guess, but it's gone down in medical folklore as a great public health first. Flushed with success, as it were, Snow went on to examine distant pipes. He found cracks and overflowing cesspools in many areas, and with his newfound standing as a medical worker, he forced other parishes to do repairs. So what is Golden Square and its environs like now? Is John Snow still remembered? I recently went to find out. The square's still there, all right. Not far from Regent Street with its upmarket shops, Carnaby Street with its trendy gear, and Shaftesbury Avenue with its theatres. It's a smallish square by London standards, with a fenced-off grassy centre, which displays a statue of George II, incongruously dressed in a Roman toga. A notice indicates that only 3 of the original 19th century houses are still standing, and that one of the characters from Dickens's Nicholas Nickleby had lived there. Of John Snow, not a word. An inquiry at a couple of shops brought blank stares. Disappointed, I left the square by Lexington Street. 200 metres down the road, it formed a T-junction with Broadwick Street. And there, right on the corner, garlanded with colourful hanging baskets and bustling with customers, was a small public house called, surprise, surprise, the John Snow. Bit of a liberty, really, as Snow was a strict teetotaler and only went into pubs to check the drains. I now recalled that after all the hoo-ha, Broad Street had been renamed. They knew all about John Snow in the hotel, of course. In fact, not only is the swinging sign outside a fine painting of the great man himself, but they do a brisk trade in John Snow ephemera, T-shirts, pens, crockery and the like. Upstairs there was a collage of yellowing contemporary newspaper and magazine clippings and a large photograph of our hero. "Always getting foreigners in here," assured the landlord. "Where did you say you were from, sir?" I told him. "Marvellous. Here, sign the book." The visitor's book was full of the names of other dewy-eyed medicos from all over the world on a similar pilgrimage. I added my name with some pride. "But what of the pump?" I wondered of mine host. Diagonally across the road, I was pointed out its replica, set up by the local council about 25 years ago. It looked innocent enough, and I noted with some satisfaction it had no handle. The attached plaque told the story. The mid-19th century saw the first real stirrings of a collective consciousness as regards the common good. Concerned citizens became dismayed at the suffering among what they then called the lower social orders. So let us remember Dr. John Snow on this 150th anniversary of his action over the Broad Street pump. It's about the likes of him and others of a similar mindset that Pericles wrote in 429 BC, perhaps somewhat chauvinistically, but with his heart in the right place. "For the whole world is a sepulchre of famous men, and their story is not graven on stone over their native earth, but lives on far away, without visible symbol, woven into the stuff of other men's lives."
The good doctor from the West, Dr. Jim Leversley, who presented so many moving tales of science over the decades. His family tells me, by the way, that he used to read poetry aloud for the enjoyment of residents in the nursing home where he spent his last days. He died in March. And yes, his hero, Dr. John Snow, changed history. Dr. Jim Leversley, Vale. I'm Robin Williams.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.